Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Monday, February 27th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. And I see
particularly like this one.
Several people here about a particular bill, so we'll start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 4027A. And Erin, would you tell us what this bill does?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4027A provides immunity from civil liability to persons who are registered volunteers with nonprofit corporation organized under laws of Oregon if person is providing services to homeless individuals or individuals at risk of becoming homeless, if services are provided without compensation, and if services do not constitute intentional tort or provided in grossly negligent manner. Expands definition of charitable organizations and specifies requirements, defines natural person, provides exception for operation of motor vehicle, vessel, aircraft, with requires license and insurance as defined by Federal Volunteer Protection Act, includes those professions within definition of charitable organization that healthcare provider may perform services and be immune from civil liability, includes pharmacists and optometrists within list of healthcare providers who are immune from liability when providing medical services free of charge, applies to causes of action arising after the effective date of this bill, declares emergency effective upon passage. We do have a -A6 amendment. The -A6 amendment expands outreach services to homeless individuals to include medical or dental services by health practitioner. We have a -A7 amendment, which restores definition of charitable or corporation, removes expanded definition of charitable organization, and specifies requirements. We have received written testimony from Partnership to End Poverty in support of the -A6 amendment, and then we also received written testimony in support of the -A6 amendment from Charles Huffington.
Okay, thank you, Erin. It looks like we have an all-star panel in front of us to tell us about the bill. So whichever of you'd like to go first.
Thank you, Madam Chair and honorable committee members. Thank you very much. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. Madam Chair and committee members, this bill was actually filed last session, and it didn't quite make the through the over to you, and I'm glad it's over here now for you to you here and hopefully move forward. This session, we introduced the bill in the House Interim Committee, so there's no names on it. It's about it's what's good to help people help people. And it all started last year when the Central Oregon Veterans Outreach Program in Central Oregon was going into homeless camps to help military veterans, and they didn't say don't help just other people, but that was their main target, but they would go in the camps. And doctors felt that they needed more assurance of liability, that they had plenty of doctors that were willing to help them, but they really wanted to address this issue, which we tried last session, as I stated, unsuccessfully. This session, the bill passed out of the committee under co-chair Jim Thompson and co-chair Mitch Greenlich. We got the bill out of the committee 8-0. The bill went to the floor, and just for your information, it was held over several times because the proponents of the bill really wanted the A6 clarified before it came over to you. And my good friend, the good representative from Bend, Oregon, Representative Conger, I put lawyers in the room and said, we're not paying you, so they'd get out quickly. And they came up with a solution to this bill that allowed to allow people to go in and do this service. The bill passed out of the House floor with a vote of 60-0. It's really a good bill, and I urge you to vote to pass this bill, House Bill 4027-A6, to the floor, and help these people help people in need. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Wisnett.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Jason Conger representing House District 54, and I am really just here in case there are any questions about the -6 amendments, what they do, and how we arrived at the language that you see before you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, I'm here on the A7 amendments, and I know it's an 11th hour, and it may be too late to get a correction made, but I want to call your attention to a potential problem that we've run into since we got through the A6s. And I would, in line with what Representative Wisnett said, this is truly a sausage bill. It's been going on in various iterations for the second session now, and there's still we're trying to do something big in a little bill, and it doesn't fit necessarily very well. On speaking directly to the A7s, the qualifiers on lines 5-8 stating that the percentage of funds an organization has to expend on medical services to qualify for this liability protection actually reduces the number of either corporations or organizations that would qualify under it. An example is that not even the Red Cross spends 65% of their income on medical services. Most of their money goes to disaster relief. The effect of the amendment would be would not allow the medical volunteers for the Red Cross to qualify for this liability protection. In Polk County, in my district, the County Commission on Children and Families holds a free clinic once a month for the area homeless and less fortunate to receive free medical services. The county contracts with a church who actually conducts the free clinic. The church is an organization, and the clinic is substantially less than 65% of their expenses. Volunteers for the free clinic in Dallas are now eliminated from the liability protection that my bill was trying to address originally. And this is a very big deal because we're trying to get more doctors to volunteer in these clinics statewide, and this is a big pushback. The people we need the most are the ones we're not likely to get. The reason that most medical volunteers are going overseas now to volunteer is because of medical liability. And this bill is a step forward with the A6s and the A7s to get people to volunteer back in their own communities instead of having to go out of the region to do that. Thank you.
So, my understanding from your testimony is that the A6s were contemplated when this bill passed the House. They were still being worked out, and the assumption was they would be adopted over here.
That is correct.
And so all of the organizations that were seeking the protection of the bill would still be covered with the A6s. Testimony I've gotten and the emails I've gotten all refer to the A6 amendments as part of what people are supporting. The A7s I don't actually see referred to representative.
No, they're late. That's why I say this may be late for that. I don't just want to call your attention to it, though, because I think it's going to be a limiting factor once we put this into play, and it's something we're going to have to look at in the future to make the bill work. I think we actually are going to have the very people we want volunteering closed out because of that particular section.
Okay, any questions for these good folks? Okay, I don't see any. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4027A and let's go back up to the top because we have people here for some of the other bills. So, let's open a public hearing and work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 212. And Erin, could you tell us what this is?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. SCR 212 establishes deadlines for pre-session filed legislative measures for the 2013 regular session of the 77th Legislative Assembly. The measure requires members and committees to submit drafting requests for measures for pre-session filing to Legislative Council on or before 5 p.m. on September 17th. Requires Legislative Council to deliver the drafts of measures for pre-session filing to requesters on or before 5 p.m. on December 7th, and the measure requires members and committees to submit drafts for pre-session filing to the Senate or House desk no later than 5 p.m. on December 28th. Now, you do have a -1 amendment before you. The measure changes the requirement for submitting the pre-session filed measures to the Senate or House desk to December 21st, 2012. The amendment also removes the provision that rules of Senate and House of Representatives apply to matters not specified in this resolution and take precedence over matters specified in the resolution. There is a no revenue, no fiscal impact on the -1 amendment.
Okay, thanks very much. Erin, it looks like Dana Richardson is here to tell us a little more about this. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
It's nice to be before you today. I'm Dana Richardson, the Legislative Director for Senate President Peter Courtney. I'm happy to answer any questions, particularly with regard to the -1s. The committee assistant has distributed a calendar that kind of you could see the dates. And the reason for the change from the 28th to the 21st, and I know Legislative Council is here as well that can speak to this, the 28th is basically the Friday of the week of Christmas. So we wouldn't anticipate typically having bills dropped the 26th, 27th, or 28th. Typically, legislators will do it prior to the holiday. And I think it would really probably help the Secretary, the Senate staff, as well as the Legislative Council staff to know what's coming in as of the 21st. With regard to removing Section 5, it is the case that chamber rules take precedence over resolutions that are adopted. Whether that language is included or not, that's the case. The resolution that we adopted to govern this session doesn't have that provision. We think it's more consistent to remove that language so that we can see moving forward. It's the same practice. Chamber rules take precedence, but there's no need to actually include that in the resolution. I'm happy to take questions. As I say, I think Robert Taylor and Dexter Johnson are here as well.
Okay. Looks like, yes, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curiosity question. Well, I don't have any problem with this at all, but why are we doing it as a resolution rather than a rule? Since the as you stated, the rules take precedent over the resolutions.
Madam Chair and Senator Beyer, it's nice to do it in a concurrent resolution so that both chambers know that they're going to be operating under the same rules, at least at the outset. Each chamber could change that, but it does kind of give weight to both chambers agreeing to it rather than having each chamber do it separately in their rules.
So I really mean this, huh?
A signal that we've all agreed to it.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, I don't see any. And I see that we do have the Secretary of the Senate and the head of Legislative Council here, and it looks like we don't have any questions for them either. So, members, we are in a work session, and Senator Beyer, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash One Amendment to SCR 212.
Thank you. Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Concurrent Resolution 212. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Amendment is adopted. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move the SCR 212 as amended to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Concurrent Resolution 212 to the floor as amended with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on his motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. Do we have a volunteer to carry this on the floor? Senator Beyer?
Oh, sure.
Okay, great. You can talk about why it's in the form of a resolution. And I will close the work session on SCR 212. And why don't we do that last? Okay, so we'll open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 4170A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4170A permits up to 6 training courses per day of up to 10 dogs per class and testing of up to 60 dogs up to 4 times per year, regardless of breed, as a conditional permitted use on land zoned exclusively for farm use, removes separate provisions separate to raising greyhounds from definition of farm use, excludes commercial boarding kennels. The measure comes to you from your House Rules Committee and from the House floor with a 60-0 vote. You do have testimony in support of the measure from Clackamas County, which is my understanding where the measure originally came from was an issue in Clackamas County. And I do not believe anybody is here to testify on the measure.
Thank you, Erin. I don't see any dogs in the room, although it sounds like there might be some lurking somewhere. And nobody to testify. So, members, we are in a work session.
Please.
There's competition for this
curiosity.
Bill. Yeah, question.
Since zoning codes differ by jurisdiction, why are we doing a statute?
It's my understanding that they wanted some, that Clackamas County, who originated this bill, wanted some clarity regarding the use of the EFU land around farm use and dog training.
Somebody from the local governments has a All right. It's always weird when a county or a city wants to do something and say, but you have the authority to do this now, to define this.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, Mike Elias and Association of Oregon Counties. Senator Beyer, to your question, yes, it is. Obviously, Clackamas County has been the champion of this bill. But there are obviously statutes in ORS Chapter 215 that deal with what you can do on land-zoned exclusive farm use, for exclusive farm use. And this just provides another, with some sideboards, another exception to, I guess, the exclusive farm use statutes allowing for some of the training of dogs.
So if I may?
Yes,
so are you saying that in Clackamas County the issue arose as to whether training dogs was an allowable use on an exclusive farm, on a farm, farm zone, EFU? Is that the issue?
Senator Beyer, yes, that's
true. Why didn't they just say that the training of dogs is an allowable agricultural use rather than specifying all of the numbers and everything? Seems like it's an overreach.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, honestly, I haven't been a big part of the discussions that have been going on with this bill, but in general, there are, in general, the default is you can't do anything on land zoned exclusively for farm use except farming unless you go get a exception in the statute, either for a conditional use or permitted use. And so this has been the product. This is a bill that came up last session. It had some issues, and so all the folks involved went back over the interim. The folks in the, I guess, the dog grooming or dog breeding community and some of the legislators involved in, along with the Farm Bureau.
Say all of the folks, do you mean that there was involvement from all the counties or most of the counties?
Senator Beyer, I know that there are a few counties that were involved, but I think Clackamas County has basically been there. It's basically been their sort of project. And that's
Madam Chair.
But I do know there has, at this point, I think that there isn't any opposition that I'm aware of.
I really don't have any problem with saying it's an allowable use, but I'm a little bothered by specifying the nuts and bolts of it.
Okay, Senator Byron, I think someone has just come into the room that might be able to shed a little light on this, but Senator Burdick, did you have a...
I think probably the person who's approaching the table is the one to ask the question of. I'm getting conflicting information. I'm having a technical difficulty, so I don't have the bill right in front of me, but the summary, one place on the agenda, it says it's... an outright use, and in the summary it says a conditional use, and that makes a difference to me.
Yeah.
And before you begin, okay, please go ahead.
Okay. Chair Rosenbaum, for the record, Sean Cleave representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. I took part in the drafting of this bill initially at the request of Patty Strand, who represents the dog breeders and agility park owners in Oregon. They brought this bill last session as citizens and weren't able to navigate the process as effectively as they probably would have liked, and also communicate their interests for what they wanted to do on their properties. So the bill was never completely drafted in a way that was probably acceptable to all parties at the table. What you have in front of you is a bill that is part of a compromise. I participated in that. A Thousand Friends participated in that. Clackamas County, obviously, was the big sponsor of moving forward with a correction. Some of the corrections that you see in front of you are the result of a court case that gave the Department of Land Use and Conservation the ability to regulate kennels, which is a permitted use in our statutes, to a greater extent on high-value farmland. I think Ledge Council, if they choose, might elaborate on that if you would like some information on that differentiation between their the department's rules and our statute, which allows kennels to be a permitted use. The real question is, are kennels, boarding and training and agility courses part of a kennel? And the statute has been interpreted in different counties differently, and in some counties they consider kennels to allow those other types of dog type activities, but because of the rule at LCDC, the particular piece of property in Clackamas County was classified as high-value farmland and thus disallowed from having these types of activities. This bill fixes that for certain activities as a permitted use. The conditional portion is for the agility courses, which would be limited to four activities a year, but be a little bit broader in the scope of the type of activities that would occur during that time. Why four? I can't tell you, except that's what the proponents asked for. Oregon Farm Bureau is neutral on the bill. And if you have any further questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Madam Chair, that's bizarre. I don't know what the court case was, but I don't see the difference between training horses and training dogs. Are animals or animals?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, I think that the Farm Bureau would agree with you. We do have some concerns regarding urban dogs that may be unleashed next to livestock.
We have urban dogs and rural dogs.
There's a difference between a working dog and a untrained dog that's near livestock for the first time. So we did have some concerns regarding those conflicts. We do think that those would be few and far between, to say the least. That initially was our interest in trying to provide some balance to the approach.
So tell us about the court case.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, which court case? Harrison Conley, Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel. I did hear you talking from over the TV, over the live feed, and so I wanted to come down.
It's good to know somebody's listening to us.
Sometimes we're able to. And so I just wanted to come down and maybe try to put this in context for you rather than jump in the middle of this if I can. And then maybe I'll respond to a question if you still have it. So with respect to exclusive farm use zones, the farm, those things that are defined as farm use are permitted outright. Mm-hmm. That includes animal husbandry. There is, in fact, a court case that says animal husbandry includes breeding of dogs, breeding and raising of dogs. There is some history in this building, however, around greyhound breeding. And those were, I mentioned, so in EFU, you've got farm uses that are outright permitted. Then you've got sub one uses, which are outright permitted non-farm uses in EFU. Then you've got sub two conditionally permitted non-farm uses in EFU. So originally, I believe the greyhound breeding was placed into one of the non-farm uses. But when you spell out greyhounds, that raises a question as to whether animal husbandry now includes dogs. So I think that's where we started, and the greyhounds moved from a conditional non-farm use to a farm use. But all of the time, that raises questions about what does animal husbandry mean for other dogs? And so we've had counties making different decisions. And then there is the issue of the fact that kennels are mentioned. So then there's an issue of whether we're talking about breeding kennels or boarding kennels. Mm. So all sorts of maneuvering has gone on in this process. But we are back to the status where animal husbandry is an allowed farm use. And we have stated in the non-farm use, the outright permitted non-farm use, small classes, up to six classes per day, 10 dogs. And then for those training uses and for those training uses that are too large to be outright permitted non-farm uses, they go into the conditional use along with boarding kennels.
I hear you, Harrison.
Was that, I hope that was helpful.
Well, you could make, you could do that same thing with horses, which have boarding facilities and breeding facilities.
And perhaps we will make sense.
Well, Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, I actually do think that a lot of this bill was based on the horse boarding statute, which is also listed very similarly to this. So it is
modeled on that.
It is kind of modeled, for lack of a better. How we arrive there is a longer story, but.
And Chair.
Senator Farrielly, we have other people in the queue before you.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question.
Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. Would you mind a friendly little amendment that would change the number of training sessions from 6 to 7?
What?
Well, that's what we're going to do next year.
No, here's the deal.
I thought this was going to be an amendment dealing with drugs in the Capitol, but.
No, maybe. So, a couple of questions. Have you checked over your comments with
just be permits dog
oh with our
training,
best friend Don Schellenberg?
Senator Rosenbaum, Senator Atkinson, no, I have not. Don is retired and no longer represents the Oregon Farm Bureau regarding these issues.
Because of the two angels on my shoulder, the good one and the Don Schellenberg one, I think Don, anyway. So if we go into the statute on this bill, isn't there another list of needs involving radio-controlled airplanes in the same statute?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Atkinson, yes, there is.
Yes, there is.
And we, only as Farm Bureau, last session, tried to approach the statute in a more constructive way so that we wouldn't get the next radio airplane listed in the statute and created 960, which provides flexibility for the counties to do any specific activity that may be approached by a citizen so that this body doesn't have to deal with as many.
I think it
fits. Do you have a follow-up?
I do. Because I train dogs. I don't know anything about agility dogs. I have, well, all my dogs are whistle trained. Hand signal, left, right, retrieve, fist, back, sit. My dogs are actually, one of my dogs on her last hunting season received love letters from men in 5 different states asking for her paw on particular weekends. But we train with electronic dog collars, just like a radio airplane. Why wouldn't this fit into that statute?
I guess I would leave that to the counties to decide.
Chair Rosenbaum, I actually think that would be a good discussion for Legislative Council to answer that question, maybe. And I will say, for the record, that I've never been, seeing as I was not part of the discussion and work group on this bill, I've never been more grateful to have people coming up behind me on this bill. So I thank both of them for that.
Senator Farrielly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to take a leap here and make an assumption, but I'd like to have that assumption tested. And it has to do with the testing of up to 60 dogs. Was it envisioned, Madam Chair, that this would be field trials for dogs?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Farrielly, I believe the sub 2 use, the conditional use, would be field type trials, jumping through hoops.
There's a difference. Madam Chair, there's a difference between what Senator Farrielly is asking and agility.
Yeah, let me clarify, Madam Chair. Sheepdogs need field trials, and they actually move the sheep around. Hunting dogs need shoot-to-retrieve trials. And so the question is, are those kinds of events, do they fit in the definition of testing? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Explicitly within the language, Senator Farrielly, I would say not specifically, but I think that would fall under the intent of the umbrella of those types of activities in this bill, for the record.
That was Madam Chair, that was a perfectly ambiguous answer. The question is really clear. Does this legislation authorize field trials for hunting and herding dogs?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Ferriola, is it possible? Could I get a copy of the language to look at? When I drafted, I think I was under the impression that this would have covered something like you described, but I would certainly like to think about that in relation to the specific language that we drafted.
Well, Madam Chair, if I could ask a follow-up while the rumination takes place.
Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Field trials for herding dogs and hunting dogs, you'd sometimes have hundreds of families who'd want to participate. This would be limited to 60 animals. So it would probably mean we would never be able to host a national trial in the state of Oregon for hunting dogs or for herding dogs. Thank you, Chair.
Chair Rosenbaum, for the record again, Sean Cleave representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. Senator Ferrioli, for your background, the Farm Bureau in consulting on this bill, which we are neutral on this particular piece of legislation, warned against using specific numbers for either events or limits on dogs as different land characteristics actually are a better indication of what the land can handle. Nevertheless, those numbers were from the proponents of the bill who are not here today. Those are the dog training people, mostly from the metro area. I've also spoken to some from the Mid-Valley who were active in advocating for this. How we arrived at those numbers, whether they're a good number or bad, whether they will cause problems more than they seek to solve solutions, I think are very good questions.
Okay, any further questions, Senator Beyer?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Harrison, what's the status of dogs being housed or trained or boarded now on EFU land?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, I think you might actually get a better answer to that from your county folks, but maybe not.
Is it precluded or is it left up to the county?
The definition of farm use includes animal husbandry and includes the raising and breeding of greyhounds. By implication, other dogs are no longer part of farm use because of the more specific statement about greyhounds. Then specifically, I believe kennels are, I'm sorry, I don't remember whether the kennels are mentioned as a sub one non-farm use or a sub two non-farm use, but I believe kenneling is mentioned as a non-farm use.
Seems like an easier way to have done this for just change the greyhounds to dogs, and then we wouldn't have a question.
And that's what you've done.
There were, I'm sure that was considered.
Any other questions for these folks? I think we may have run this jug into the ground.
I hesitate to ask, but the language is very specific here. Madam Chair, was this anticipated that the training all be done inside a building?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Ferrioli, thank you for allowing me to make a clarification about what I think we intended there. I believe the concern there focuses on pre-existing, that there was no intention to allow new structures or buildings for this purpose. So in the House committee, I testified as well there that it is my impression that we are not intending to limit dog training or testing outdoors.
Thank you.
It might be better if you stated your intentions with respect to that language than for me to state whatever I understood it to be.
I think while we've been asking all of these questions, the sponsor of this bill, actually the citizen sponsor, has arrived, who might be able to shed more light on exactly what the bill's trying to get at. So I think we'll
off the hook.
Dismiss you. Thank you very much for your valiant efforts at answering our questions. And if you'd like to come forward and testify, we'd be pleased to hear from you.
Madam Chair, this whole conversation is giving me violent flashbacks about my tenure on LCDC.
Oh, dear.
For the record, I'm Patty Strand from Portland, Oregon. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I just found out the hearing was going on, so that's why I'm late.
So we have been, I think, a little bit lost as far as exactly what problem the bill's trying to solve, and you probably could shed light on that. Just
right.
Tell us a little bit about how, very briefly, how this bill came to be and what you think it would do.
Yeah, historically, dogs were not mentioned in the EFU, you know, years ago when it was first passed. And then a series of other laws were passed over the last 30 or 40 years, which kind of confused the issue for county government in knowing how to interpret what the law means. And one of the things that was addressed just a second ago as I came in was the fact that greyhound racing and training was put into the bill. Well, after that was added to the law back in the late 80s, many of the counties interpreted the fact that greyhounds were in there at all as demonstrating that no other dogs could be on the land. And it was a false interpretation, but it was the interpretation that began to happen. So little by little, county governments have said, you really can't do anything with dogs on EFU land, which obviously was not the intention. I think 40% of households in Oregon, both urban and rural, have dogs, so clearly they're there. And I don't know the specific questions that you were addressing the gentleman before I came in, but I'm happy to try to answer them for you. Basically, people who are training dogs on EFU land today have been closed down as that not being a permitted use. So this bill, by saying that you can train dogs on your own property, says that this will be a permitted use. And the question I heard you ask as I came in, there was an amendment that was made which leads the current wording in the bill to a possible interpretation that it can only happen indoors. That was not the intention, and when it was read on the House floor, they clarified that for the record, that it can be outdoors. But if it's in a building, they wanted it to be in a pre-existing building. That's why that wording was added.
Okay. Yes, Senator Beyer.
Where did the numbers come from?
The numbers came because last session we came forward with a bill that was much more expansive. We asked that it simply be an allowed use on farmland since animal husbandry actually covers that. And I think that was something that was seen as too expansive. And so we went back and we surveyed all of the people who train dogs, and they said we need room. We need to be able to train 8 to 10 dogs. That's all we need. So we actually arrived at that number. And then we capped the number at 60 for the events, because events larger than that either go to fairgrounds, or in this particular bill, we said you have to get a conditional use, which is the way it is right now. So anything more than 10 dogs for training, and you must apply for a conditional use. And if you're going to have more than 4 events that have 60 dogs or more, you must also apply for a conditional use permit. And that will accomplish our issues.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Yes, Senator Farioli.
When you refer to the event, what is it that you have in your mind? What is the event we're referring to?
This bill has also been sometimes called the agility bill. There are dog testing activities which are part of animal husbandry too, which have gone on in Oregon since the 1800s, actually, and the events that are the most popular right now are things like obedience and agility trials and things like that.
So, Madam Chair, if I might, the questions that were asked before you arrived have to do with working dogs.
Yes.
Field trials are frequently held for herding dogs, for sheep and cattle.
Yes.
And for hunting dogs, it's the shoot-to-retrieve trials and, find, flush, and retrieve. Mm-hmm. And those activities don't appear to be covered in this bill, except by perhaps interpretation. And the issue was the number of 60. Mm-hmm. On a shoot-to-retrieve, you might have a couple hundred people want to show up and run their dogs.
But they show in Oregon almost exclusively on public lands. We did run this by the field trial people.
Not true. Eastern Oregon has shoot-to-retrieve on private lands and field trials for sheep and cattle happen mostly on private ranches, mm-hmm. just like ranch rodeos occur.
The issue for field trials for us, and I was on the AKC board for 16 years, and I've been talking to the department back there, and that actually was a concern of mine, and so we have not ever talked about field trials, you know, relative to this bill. We've talked about in the early sessions last year and then over on the House side in the Rules Committee. We've talked about the four activities, which have been agility, obedience, lure coursing, and tracking. And herding is already allowed because it is a farm use. They consider herding to be allowed. And
you
with
do
the field
trials, dog, Madam Chair.
Yeah, and with the field trials, the only problems that we've ever had, we've never really been challenged because literally they've been going on since the 1800s in Oregon, and the only problems that they have are related more to fish and wildlife issues rather than farm issues. So we kind of didn't want to get into that territory. We're happy to narrow it just to the four things we've talked about.
Last question.
Senator Farioli.
Is it possible that the passage of this bill would eliminate the possibility of field trials for shoot to retrieve and herding?
I don't believe it would. If it has any possibility for negative impact, I think we could come back and clarify that. I know that the people at AKC and the field trialers in Oregon that I've talked to were happy with our bill.
I've been hearing from dog breeders who specialized in herding dogs, and their concern was that they would never be able to have a national field trial in Oregon because of
not
the herding. Numbers of dog owners that would show up.
Yeah.
And I've been hearing from shoot to retrieve trainers who say that it looks like training dogs for hunting might be a question that some counties would say, well, you're not authorized under this legislation.
Don't know. The people I've spoken to, the head of the performance division at AKC and the local leaders of the field trial community, I guess because they have not been bothered before, since it has gone on for over 100 years, they just don't feel vulnerable. They feel, you know, their issues are ones that have more to do with fish and wildlife, according to the people I've talked to, but you're getting letters, so you're hearing from different folks.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, we don't have anybody else to testify on this bill, and we are in a work session, so this bill had no opposition on the House side, has been worked on for two sessions. If members aren't ready to vote on it today, we can carry it over to our hearing tomorrow.
Madam Chair, I would be much more comfortable knowing the answers to the question that we asked Legislative Council about whether or not this would preclude field trials for hunting dogs and herding dogs. And I'm sure Ledge Council will come back with an answer for us.
Okay, so we will carry this over to our next hearing, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 4170. And we have two elections bills. We'll try to crank them out quickly. So I'll open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 4171. And Erin, would you tell us about this bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 4171 modifies deadline for Secretary of State to file information with county clerks regarding candidates for office of President and Vice President of the United States. At November 2012 general election, there is an emergency clause on this measure. It comes to you from your House Rules Committee and the House floor with 60-0 votes.
And I see Mr. Trout here, so would you like to tell us a little about this bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Steve Trout, State Election Director. This is really as simple as it looks. With the later dates of the national major party nominating conventions, this bill is necessary for us to allow those nominating conventions to make their nominations so that we can communicate the results of that to the county clerks. That's all this does. We had to do it 4 years ago, and we're back again this year, and we're hopeful that 4 years from now, we won't have to do this because the dates of mailing ballots to our military and overseas voters continue to move back as well. And so that's what this bill is about.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions for this witness? Okay. Why don't you just stay put, because I think we have another bill that you might want to talk about in a minute, too. And members, we are in a work session. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 4171 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation, and no, I will not carry the bill.
Senator Farioli has moved House Bill 4171 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And do we have a volunteer to carry this?
Senator Atkinson.
Jenny asked me, she just sent me a note, said she wanted to carry it.
Okay, well, between Senator Burdick and Senator Atkinson, I'm sure we have a carrier. So I will close the work session on House Bill 4171 and open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 4173. And Erin, could you tell us about this bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 4173 permits printing names of political parties and word incumbent, if applicable, with candidate name on ballot instead of specifying printing opposite or following candidate name. There is an emergency clause on this measure. This measure as well comes to you from your House Rules Committee and from the House floor with 60-0 votes.
Thank you very much, Erin. And Steve, would you like to say something about this bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Steve Trout, State Election Director. This is definitely a cleanup bill. Current statute requires the candidate's political party to be printed opposite the name. None of our existing voting systems within the state will allow that. All of the counties currently print their political party names underneath the candidate names, and so this bill is to give them the flexibility to be able to do that.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, looks like we don't have any. And members, we are in a work session. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4173 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation, and as it has to do with ballots, I would ask that I not be allowed to carry this bill.
Senator Farioli, we don't make anybody do anything they don't want to do.
That is not true. Thank you very much.
Okay, Senator Farioli has moved House Bill 4173 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And Senator Atkinson and Senator Burdick, whichever of you is not carrying the last bill, would you like to carry this bill?
This one's more simple.
Senator Atkinson. Thank you.
The other one.
Senator Atkinson will carry this on the floor. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 4173. And committee will stand at ease for just a moment. And okay, let's reopen a work session on House Bill 4027A. And members, we heard this just a little bit ago. We do have a -6 amendment on the bill. And Senator Farioli, did you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the -6 A6 amendment to House Bill 2047.
Senator Farioli has moved the -A6 amendment to House Bill 4027. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? Amendment is adopted. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, move House Bill 4027 is amended to the floor with a do-pass.
Senator Farioli moves House Bill 4027 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And Senator Farioli, would you like to carry this?
No, ma'am. Thank you very much, ma'am, because I would be forced to relive a traumatic moment on the Senate floor with an issue of a limited liability for health care deliverers.
Okay. Then the chair will volunteer to carry this bill on the floor. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 4027. and open a work session on House Concurrent Resolution 205.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House HCR 205 is a memorial to Alan Penn, 1936-2011. He is a former member of the House of Representatives from 1969 to 1973 from the Clackamas County area.
Okay, thank you, Erin. And I think this had a lot of discussion on the House side, so we probably just need a motion, Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Concurrent Resolution 205 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Ferrioli has moved HCR 205 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And Senator Olson, I think, has volunteered to carry this, so we'll ask him to do that. And I'll close the work session on HCR 205 and open a work session on, guess what, Senate Concurrent Resolution 211.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, SCR 211 adjourned sunny day of the 2012 regular session of the 76th Legislative Assembly.
Thank you, Erin. So I think members recognize the significance of SCR 211.
Madam Chair, I'm getting an amendment prepared to make this retroactive.
Ah, very good.
How quickly can we get this on the floor, Madam Chair?
We'll eagerly await those amendments. Okay, Senator Ferrioli, did you have a motion?
SCR 211 to the floor to be acted upon immediately as a special order of business.
Senator Ferrioli, would you like to rephrase
that? Yes, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move SCR 211 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Ferrioli has moved SCR 211 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion?
I like the original motion better.
Any objection?
Yes.
No. Would you like us to call the roll?
Yep. I always vote no on this.
Okay.
Tradition.
Mike, would you please call the roll?
No.
Aye.
Senator
Burdick?
Aye. Aye.
Vice Chair Ferrioli?
Aye.
Cross me out.
Aye. Motion carries. And perhaps the chair and the vice chair could co-carry this on the floor. And we shall do so, and I'll close the work session on SCR 211. And I think that completes our agenda for today. So with nothing further to come before us, members, we stay tuned.
Anyway.
We will
be meeting tomorrow. I'm sure you didn't want to put the date of Wednesday the 29th into the motion. Midnight, Wednesday the 29th.
We'll take that under consideration. Thank you, Senator Ferrioli, and members, we're adjourned.
I would love for that.